that very first deal was very scary. And, you know, after 2 months, it was smashed up and the tenants had skipped town and my partners didn't want to put any more money in and I was stuck with the mortgage.
Are you a real estate investor looking to sharpen your skills or a newbie looking to become one? You're in the right place. Welcome to Where Should I Invest? Real Estate Investing in Canada with your host, Sarah Larby.
Hey guys, it's Sarah Larby here and welcome to another episode of my podcast. Today we are going to be speaking with Stefan Arnio, and Stefan is a very successful flipper in Winnipeg. He has been doing this for almost 10 years and this is his full-time job. He's currently flipping multiple properties at a time. So really, really excited for you guys to hear about Stefan's experience. Before we get started, I did want to answer some questions as I get some emails from you guys. And one of you had asked me about a recent property that I have recently refinanced and just some details about that. And so I wanted to talk about the last property that I refinanced. And this is a property that I purchased in Brantford, Ontario for $151,000. This was in December of 2016. So I bought this property. And because I like to find tenants ahead of time, I had asked for my 4 showings upon signing the agreement to purchase the property. And I had found tenants that moved in literally 2 days after we got the keys. So the house definitely was dated. It had some wall paneling. Actually, it had a purple bathtub. You don't see those very often anymore. It had probably purple everything. So the wall trim was purple. The wall paneling was not purple, but there was some ugly wall paneling everywhere. Really old tiles on the kitchen. Anyways, just think about a 60s house. So anyways, the tenants loved the house, so they moved in. They didn't want anything changed. And they ended up breaking up in September. So we decided to actually renovate that property. Instead of putting a tenant in it right away, we wanted to increase the rent. And we knew that that property, because we had bought it at such a great price, we knew that there was some equity in it. So we ended up having one of the contractors work on it for about 2.5 months, and we put about $30,000 of work. So the flooring, we actually ended up getting a new kitchen, and I found some stainless steel appliances for like $1,800 on Kijiji. So all in all, and actually we redid the roof on that one too. So all in all, it was still $30,000, and we ended up getting it reappraised. So we had the person from the bank come in, the appraiser, take a look at it, and he actually appraised our house for $275,000. So it was actually really cool because it was just this past January. We got it reappraised right before the new rules changed. We were able to get about $100,000 out of that property in literally a year's time. And the best part was I didn't have to do any of the work. I didn't have to go there and swing a hammer. It was all very remote. And I think that the reason that we were able to do that was because we had a great team in place. And you'll hear a lot about getting the right team, the right people and that you can trust. And that's the most important thing. So yeah, there were some hiccups here and there, but for the most part, it was probably one of the best deals that we've ever done. I think one of the reasons that we were able to do so well is that because we focus on one market, we're just able to jump on the deals right away. So I just wanted to share that with you guys because there's lots of different ways that you can make money in real estate. I mean, you can buy and hold for the long term. You can do flips, but you can also do a mix of both. And you can do what's called a BRRR, where you buy a property, you renovate a property, you rent out a property, and you get it refinanced. And so we were actually able to re-rent that property. And I had people coming through on the weekends while it was still under renovations, but found this amazing tenant. And they moved in, and now they're paying $1,545 a month plus utilities. And the original rent was $1,295. So a nice little jump, a great tenant, and an amazing house. But at the end of the day, now we have more equity and more money to be able to buy more properties as deals come up. So when you buy properties, just look at all the different opportunities that you can do. And if you're a buy and hold investor, there might be some opportunities where you have the ability to put in some money to renovate it and be able to pull out a lot more. Again, calculate your numbers. You want to make sure that you know what the after repair value will be. And you want to know roughly how much your total renovations costs are going to be, because you want to make sure that there is still a buffer in there that you can pull out your money. Okay, so I just want to run you through the numbers again so that you guys understand how the BRRR works. So this property was purchased for $151,000, and the banks require in Canada $30,000, or well, 20% down payment, which is about $30,000. And so the mortgage is $120,000. The renos cost $30,000. And when the appraiser came to reassess, they said that the house is now worth $275,000. So now I would go back to the bank and I would get it refinanced. And so what happens is, from the $275,000, I still have to leave 20% in the deal, because it's 80% loan to value. That's what the banks want as your skin in the game. So $55,000 has to stay no matter what. Now, the new mortgage is $220,000. Instead of the $120,000 that it currently was. So your new mortgage is $220,000. The difference between $220,000 and what I owed, which was $120,000, is actually what I can pull out. So in this case, it was $100,000. And then when I subtract the $30,000 that I paid for the renovations, the net amount that was made from that deal was $70,000. So you can pull out your renovation cost. You can also pull out your down payment cost, and you still have some left over in this case. So one of the ways that people can keep going is that they pull out their money so that they can keep going for the next ones rather than leaving it in the deal. So I am a big fan of refinancing, because if you buy right and you buy under market and you find those good deals, you should be able to do it within 2, 3, 4 years of buying a property. There's no reason why you should leave that money with the bank. I think as much as possible, use it. But when you do use it for other properties, just make sure that you factor in the cost of that money that you're going to have to pay back every single month. So make sure that you calculate that into your cash flow numbers, because you don't want to be paying that out of pocket, but rather if you're going to use the lines of credit, or if you're going to do a complete cash out refi, but especially for the line of credit, just make sure that you factor whatever that payment amount is into your cash flow for that next property that you're buying. So hopefully that was easy for you guys to understand. Feel free to email me for any questions or any clarifications, and I would be happy to walk through it with you guys. So that answers the question about my favorite deal so far in my last refinance. If you guys have any questions, please email me at sarah@saralarby.com. And when you have a moment, please subscribe to the podcast. It'll allow others to find it a lot easier. And without further ado, let's move on to our interview with Stefan Arneau.
Hey, Stefan. Thanks very much for coming on the show.
Hey, Sarah. How are you?
Good. I'm really excited to have you here. And I think you've got a lot of great insights that we can share today with the listeners.
Wonderful.
So my first question actually to you is, why did you get into real estate instead of stocks or mutual funds or something different?
Wow, that's a great question. I wanted to be a rock star, Sarah, when I was 16. So I told my mom, I told my dad, I want to be a rock star. And I got into music, and I was in 8 bands in 10th grade. And, you know, I had a rock band, and I was in the symphony, and I was in the jazz groups, and, you know, honor band and all these things. And I guess, you know, I was in the music, I had a little music business, and I was graduating from the university because my mother told me, well, hey, you got to get a degree if you're going to be a musician, which is completely false. But I went to the music school, I dropped out, I went to computer science, I dropped out, I went to the business school, I dropped out, fine, I finished with an English degree and a minor in music. And in my last semester at the University of Manitoba, I was walking through the tunnel and the hallways underneath the ground. In Manitoba, it's so cold here, the students walk underground so they don't freeze. And there was a poster and it said, "Get rich like Rich Dad, Poor Dad." And I saw this book and I thought, you know, I have a poor dad. My dad's a limo driver. And I wonder what it'd be like to have a rich dad. So I went and bought this book. And I read that book, Sarah, in one sitting. I think I sat down and I just read the whole thing. And, you know, the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad talked about passive income. It talked about investing in real estate. It talked about building a business and using the business income to invest in real estate. And it just struck a chord with me. It just made sense. You know, like I thought the only way to get rich was to be a rich and famous rock star. But suddenly I learned that anybody could be rich if they invested in real estate, which really gave me a lot of hope because my band fell apart and I was getting kind of depressed and I had some post-grad depression because I didn't really want the degree I had and I kind of felt like I wasted my time. But to read that anybody could become rich through real estate really hooked me. And today, you know, I'm not a stock guy. The three major asset classes, you know, it's business, it's usually equities and real estate. I'm a business guy and a real estate guy, and I do not really touch stocks. I don't touch crypto. I don't believe in it because, well, for me, I don't believe in it. I mean, obviously, there's lots of people making money with those things, but I believe in control and I believe in management. And because I have the control and the management, I believe I can get better returns.
That's a great point. Just out of curiosity, what did your friends and your family say when you decided to say goodbye to your degree and hello to real estate?
Well, they hated it. I mean, they hated every minute of it. I was, you know, I was kind of angry actually, Sarah, when I was graduating in 2008 because I never wanted that degree. I think looking back, I should have dropped out of school at 16 and just went into sales. But, you know, I say I should have dropped out and sold vacuums for a living. I would have been much happier. But, yeah, my parents, you know, they resisted the idea of real estate. You know, my mother's a teacher. My father was an entrepreneur turned limo driver. And they resisted. They wanted me to have, like, my dad's advice was go get an economics degree now that you have a English degree and you can work at the bank, which is a horrible idea. And then my mother wanted me to get a teaching degree to add on to my English degree so I could teach like her. She's also an English teacher. So I looked at that, and those were bad options. And the options that I wanted, I went out and bought a Donald Trump weekend real estate course at the time. And I know that people slam his course or they slam his company, and I think he had a class action lawsuit for giving back $25 million to people that probably didn't get service. But I took that weekend course. It was $1,500. I remember bringing it home to my mom, and I said, you know, my mom is in bed. She was sleeping, and I knocked on her door. I said, "Hey, Mom, I bought this course." And she said, "You paid too much. That's not going to work, and, you know, that's a bad idea." And I had dinner with my dad on Saturday. They're divorced, so you have to go to one house for negativity and the other house for the other negativity. And my father said to me, "You're never going to buy a property. No one's ever going to finance you. And even if you do, the bank's going to call the mortgage and you're going to be foreclosed on and you're going to be broke and out on the street." So my mom was negative about it. My dad was negative about it, but they were negative because they were trying to protect me.
Right. Right?
That's what families do.
So how did you overcome that?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I graduated in 2008. So this would have been right around that time, like give or take, you know. I remember graduating or getting ready to graduate, and like I was kind of almost terrified because there was no plan. I had no plan for anything, and an English degree with a minor in music is totally unemployable. And like I think my first job out of school was minimum wage, $10 an hour, answering the phone or working in a call center. So, you know, the world now is not the world of your grandma or the world of your mother, where you could get a degree and you could live. You know, nowadays, 33% of the population has degrees. And this was in 2008. And so it was a tough time. And I guess the real reason, Sarah, is I was screwed. I had no options. So I just went into real estate and I stuck it out and got obsessed with it because I didn't have anything else in my life to win economically.
So how did you actually pull the trigger and get the first deal?
Well, first of all, I went to a whole bunch of seminars and put myself in a whole bunch of debt. Because, of course, these seminars are teaser seminars. A lot of them, they give you a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But, you know, the full meal deal of real estate or any industry takes a long time to learn. You're not going to learn it in 1 weekend. So I went to one free event, and I met five other guys, and we were playing the Robert Kiyosaki cash flow game. And we were eating some cheese and some crackers. I didn't know these guys at all. And then the phone rang, and one of the guys is a realtor, and there was a desperate seller on the phone. And the six of us partnered up to buy this house. And I had a job at Frito-Lay putting chips on shelves every morning, which was an upgrade from my call center job. And I said, hey, guys, I'll hold the mortgage because I'm stupid. <You know? laughs> So I held the mortgage for these other guys, and that was my very first little house. I think we each put $1,200 down.
Wow.
And that was back in, I think, 2009. But it was, you know, Sarah, it was really hard because it's a big fear barrier, right? When you start out in real estate, it's a big dollar amount, and it's scary, and there's lots of unknowns, and you're exposed to human nature and tenants and what people are going to do. And, you know, it was a real learning experience. And I've since done, you know, over 100 deals since. But that very first deal was very scary. And, you know, after 2 months, it was smashed up and the tenants had skipped town and my partners didn't want to put any more money in and I was stuck with the mortgage. So, you know, it didn't go well right out of the gate.
So you've had a little bit of a horror story to start. How did you move on to the second and start scaling up to get to that 100? Because you've done a lot of different deals. I was looking and you've done wholesaling, you've done flips, you've done rentals. How did you go from this potential nightmare deal to 100 properties plus?
Well, I talk about that in my book, Self-Made, and I go and I get this property and I guess we cash flow it or we're renting it out and get smashed up, and then none of the partners can agree on, are we going to fix it ourselves or are we going to put more money in? Nobody likes either idea, right? Human nature is we got to save our money, save our energy. That's how humans think. So I'm stuck with the mortgage, and I ended up raising money from an investor and buying everybody else out. So then I became the owner, and the second deal is even worse than the first deal.
Oh, no.
I hate to tell you this story. It gets darker before dawn. Uh-oh. My second deal, I bought a burned-down mansion in downtown Winnipeg, and it was right next to one of the biggest employers, Great West Life, and had a parking lot at the back. And I thought, wow, downtown parking, this parking lot can cash flow this building if I bought it. So I bought it cheap enough that the parking could cash flow the building as is. And then I went out and raised about $150,000 to fix up the property. Now, I thought it would take 6 months to fix it up, and we would just be fixing it up, putting some tenants in there, making a fourplex. It turned out into an 18-month project, cost $250,000, almost bankrupted my investor. And I really got christened by fire on that. You know, fire and trial and error really, really got me to learn. And I still own that building today. I bought it for $160,000. It's worth about $600,000 now.
That's great.
Yeah, it that second building actually got me out of the rat race because it had so much cash flow, I didn't need a crappy job anymore. So, you know, I've been out of the rat race since I was 23. I'm 31 now. It was scary. It was hard. But, you know, the beautiful thing with real estate is you only need one or two deals to change your life.
Right.
You know, if you do one or two big enough deals, you could not need a job anymore. You could have a great retirement fund just from one or two things. That's all it takes.
Do you still have your first property?
That one we flipped and sold. So my policy with holding properties is I only want to hold really good stuff. So I like downtown parking. Anything that's got downtown parking, I'll hold on to. The trouble with holding properties is you need good properties that manage well. And that first one was a single family home, and those never manage well. So I don't manage my own properties. I'm traveling all over the world. I've got, you know, multiple ventures, about 11 income streams. I don't have time to mess around with properties. So I only want stuff that manages well. And I want stuff, usually I like to hold stuff with downtown land. So that property, that first one, does not fit that criteria, but we fixed it and sold it and made some money, so that was good.
So you did mention you have some joint venture partners and some investors that helped you with some of this money. As a newbie, how do I go from 1 to 2 properties to over 100? How does that even work?
Well, you got to get OPM involved, Sarah, other people's money. And people hear OPM, they think opium like the drug. No, it's other people's money. And I wrote a book in 2013 called Money People Deal. And it's now the $5 million book, Money People Deal. You can get it online. And how raising money works, getting other people's money involved, there's three parts to putting a deal together. There's the money, which is the investors. There's the people, which is, you know, you and maybe the contractors and the realtors and mortgage brokers. And then there's the deal, which is, you know, the property or the opportunity itself. And so when you put those three things together, that's where you create equity. And equity is how you get rich. People are really interested in cash flow and they get in the business. I always say people get into real estate for cash flow and they get out for cash flow. Like when, if a property starts hitting them and sucking their money, cash flow is making them get out and it makes them get in. So when you put those three things together, that creates equity, and equity is where you get rich. So to get the three parts, if you're somebody with no experience and no money and no resources, or you're starting out, you need to go tie up a deal and tie up the team. So you have two of the three pieces. If you have two of the three, the third one comes. A lot of people just have one of the three pieces or zero of the three, so they never get any money.
Right.
So the biggest investment that I think people need to do if they're starting out and they want to get serious with real estate is you've got to spend some money on some education. You know, I think it's interesting that people go to med school and spend $150,000 learning to be a doctor to make $150,000 a year. But in real estate investing, people think they're going to spend $20 on a book and be a millionaire tomorrow. Well, it doesn't work like that. You know, you've got to get educated. You've got to get trained, because this is as technical as being a medical doctor. It's as technical as flying a plane or being a pilot, especially if you scale up a business and make a real business out of it.
So from that book, it sounds like there's a lot of tips that you're giving. Can you share some more tips from the book?
Yeah, there's lots of things. I mean, we've got 21 steps for putting a joint venture together in there. I've got how to build a brand. You know, I'm a brand printer, Sarah, where everything I do is under my brand. So I have a Stephan Arneil brand. And one thing that real estate investors do or need to do when they start out is start building a brand so you can attract money and attract private deals to yourself. I was in a private deal yesterday. I think I'm going to buy it for $190. The offer's in. We just got to wait for the bank to take it. It's a foreclosure. $190, and it's worth $380.
So how do you find something like that?
Well, that's brand power. So I have a brand built, and people come to me with opportunities because I have a brand. I'm one of the more visible guys in the city. So people come to me because they see me. But acquisitions, we acquire about a house every week, Sarah. So
wow.
Every week we're buying a house, and I'll wholesale probably 40 to 60% of them right now. But we also fund and flip the other percentage. So every week my team is getting property at 40 to 60 cents on the dollar. And that's through typically one of three ways: networking, marketing, or negotiating. So that deal yesterday was a networking deal. It came privately through my network because I'm connected through, you know, just being kind of gangster in the market. And then there's marketing, which is, you know, your ads and your signs and your internet funnels and all those things. And then there's negotiating, which is just simply the ability to negotiate and close the prices you need, which most new investors are horrible negotiators, especially if you're Canadian. If you're an immigrant, you have a better chance because immigrants hustle a little more. But if you're a Canadian-born Canadian negotiator, you're the worst negotiator in the world. Literally. Like I think Canada, we pay the most for everything in the world in Canada. So it's a fact. Like, we are the worst negotiators.
So what are some tips that you use when it comes to negotiating? What do you say, and can you share a little bit of your tactics?
Yeah, well, I wrote a book on negotiating, came out this year, called The 10 Commandments of Negotiation. And one of the things that's very important in negotiation is there was a study done some years ago with 150 CEOs. And they were trying to figure out what are the top three traits for a great negotiator. And the top three most desirable traits that CEOs of companies wanted for their negotiators was, number one, personality. You got to have a great personality, because people will give you better terms and better deals if you have a personality. Second one is organization of information. So how well do you organize and track information? I have some very advanced tracking systems for information. Well, they're primitive, but they're advanced. So we teach that to people, and we're training them how to negotiate, is organizing and tracking information. And then the last one is an understanding of human nature. So like I said, you know, we're talking about human nature before. If you understand human nature and the darkness of human nature, you can really predict and understand what people are going to do, because people act in their own self-interest. You know, you say selfishness is bad, but most people do whatever interests them, right? They don't do what interests you. So if you understand human nature, and if you have a personality, and if you're able to organize information, that's a good baseline for starting out to being a good negotiator.
So can you give us an example of maybe a deal that you've bought on 40 to 60 cents on the dollar, and just the process, how you found it, how you closed on it, maybe the numbers, and you know how you sold it afterwards? Are you able to walk us through it in some more detail?
Yeah, well, I bought one. I'll go through one that, you know, it takes quite a while to complete a flip. If you do a flip, it takes about 6 to 8 months. So like last March, I got a call on a Saturday from one of my realtors. I work with several realtors, a couple dozen of them. And so one of them brings me, he says, hey, I got a private deal. So I go take a look at this house, and it's a house that a guy bought kind of in a more ghetto area 20 years ago, but today it's a really great area. So it was ghetto at the time, and now it's a nice area. And I guess it was this single guy. He had a couple Rottweilers in his house. He was fixing it up. He fell off a ladder, hurt his back. So he had this thing, you know, 70% fixed up, 80% fixed up. And this property is worth, you know, 170, 180, somewhere in that range. I bought the property from him for $90,300.
Wow.
So I buy it privately. And then we put in, I think, $35,000 for kitchen, bath, pouring, paint. And then had that property sold. I believe that one was done in about 100 days, cradle to the grave. And we sold it for $177,000. So that was, you know, a good little perfect deal. I think we net after everything on that one, I think it was about $25,000 net on one deal. And that's a little crappy starter home in Winnipeg, $177,000 home with a $25,000 net profit. Really nice, you know, after paying partners, after paying everybody. So that's a good little deal. And if you understand how to acquire those, how to fund them, how to fix them, you can do that as many times as you want.
Yeah, so you've raised a few great points, and I think having a team in place that you can trust and that does a great job, that's also fair and reasonable in price, is very helpful. How did you come up with your team, and who do you have on your team? Can you walk us through that?
Yeah, so the team, I mean, it comes back to money, people, deal, like in the book. So, mm-hmm. You know, you got a realtor. Well, if I say you have to have a main realtor and several satellite realtors. I work with several realtors. If you want to do this business for real, you need lots of realtors, suppliers, deal suppliers. And then, you know, every team needs a mortgage broker. I don't use mortgage brokers that much, but it's good to have one in your back pocket. You're going to need a home appraiser, is good to have in your back pocket. We use about 6 general contractors. So I like to use general contractors instead of trades, because when you start using all the trades, now you have to manage those trades. And again, I don't want to manage construction people. It's not my job. I want to run the deal pipeline and raise the money. And then, you know, you're going to have some investors investing in you. That's a whole nother game in itself, learning to get investors on board. And then you're going to have a selling realtor to sell it. You know, you're going to have a lawyer. You're going to have an accountant. The team actually can turn quite large. I think my team, you know, if you take all the power team members, there's probably about 40 different power team members. I have 10 employees in the office, 6 GCs. So it's a massive group of people when you start putting it all together.
The contractor piece is probably helpful. I'm trying to get my basement done as an example, just for my house. And I've had, I don't know how many people book meetings and not even show up. So not having to deal with trades, especially when you're buying a house a week, probably is a blessing.
Well, are you managing the trades yourself, like the individual guys?
With my properties, yes, I am.
Yeah, so that's, I mean, I've done that before. I've been the GC. And what I found, Sarah, is there's just no money in it. So, I mean, you can do that, but I would rather make $1,000 an hour putting the next deal together than make $30 an hour managing some GCs and going to Home Depot or Rona and getting the siding in the truck. And, you know, I just, like, I want to make $1,000 an hour. That's my job. Mm-hmm. If you make $1,000 an hour for 2,000 hours, you're making $2 million a year. That's better than $30 an hour, which is like $60,000 a year. So you just got to decide, like, you know, what jobs are you going to do? You want to do the $1,000 an hours, which is, you know, getting deals, raising capital, negotiating, high level networking, high level relationships. That's what you want to do all day. And everything else somebody else can do at a lower rate of pay.
Some great points for sure. Now, do you think it's easier for you being that you're in Winnipeg, or do you think it's just a matter of having the right tools in place?
Well, you know what? I train people all over the country. So I've got guys in Ontario out there. I got one guy did 18 flips last year. So that was in Ontario. I've got other students who are doing 6 or 8 or 10 flips a year in Ontario. I've got guys in Saskatoon doing a deal to a deal and a half, two deals a month. It's all about your skills, and you can't blame the market. I mean, obviously, you know, going into the core GTA, like the downtown, that's a very advanced game for very rich people. So if you're starting out, you're not going to go to downtown Toronto. If you're starting out, you're not going to go to the downtown Vancouver. That's an end game for very rich people, hundreds of millions of dollars to play there.
Right.
But I say within a 1 hour radius of your house, you can do this business on a part-time scale, which would be about 6 deals a year, or a full-time scale, which is like 12 deals a year, 12 deals plus. And I've got students all over the country to prove that you can do this just about anywhere. It comes down to your skills and your systems and your education. I used to believe, Sarah, that you could only do 12 deals a year in Winnipeg. That used to be a belief, but it was a limiting belief. It wasn't the reality that there's 180,000 homes and 3% of them are going into foreclosure or default a year. Let's just do the math. The interest rate is the default rate. So if you've got 180,000 homes times 0.03%, we got 5,400 homes going into default every year in Winnipeg. Now, whether or not those homes come right through the pipeline and go on the market or go to auction is irrelevant. That's how many people are having problems in Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you go to, let's say, Toronto or any local market, just take the interest rate and multiply it by the number of homes, and that's how many people have problems. So there's tons and tons of people who have problems with their properties, but unless you're digging and getting into the market and using some of the methods that we teach, you're not going to be able to find the opportunity, because good opportunities like the one I was in yesterday for 190 worth 380, as soon as I was in that was a private deal off market. There's two other guys coming in right after me. So that deal's never going to make it to the market. All the good deals are getting traded under the table, and you got to get under the table. It's kind of gangster, sir. It's gangster, you know. It literally is. I got a chapter in my book. It says insider trading and why you need to do it. It is insider trading, but if you're an outsider, you're not getting inside.
Yeah, some very interesting insights. So when you're looking for money, can you talk about how you structure the joint ventures and how you set them up? Is it 50-50? Is it 40-60? How does that work?
So when I started, I did a lot of 50-50, and that's generally a bad idea because you overpay the investors. Now, if you want to promote your brand and get everybody lined up to work with you, that's a great way to build buzz around your brand, 50-50. And like, that's what I did when I started. I ended up with 18 investors and $5 million of cash in about a year, year and a half, because I was doing 50-50 splits. What I do today is I do preferred returns, 8 to 12% to rich people only. I only work with rich people. You have to be rich to work with me. $150,000 minimum down. And I want only multimillionaire, usually businessmen who've sold businesses. And I don't say, I'm not here to exclude women. I mean, you could be a businesswoman. It's just people who've sold businesses, typically more men than women. So, you know, somebody who has sold a business, somebody who's a multimillionaire, somebody who can throw around 150 grand minimum in one shot. And so I work with very rich people now, and I pay them preferred returns and I keep all the upside, which is great because if I screw it up, they still get paid. And if I do really well, I get a really nice paycheck. So it's good because it keeps everybody honest. The 50-50, I do not like. You're overpaying if you do well and you're underpaying if you do badly. So I think it's a starter thing that people can do to start. It's a little bit amateur, but, you know, it's a great way to get going. And I've done tons and tons, dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of 50-50 deals. And so I'll never say don't do it. I'm just saying that's your last choice out of all the ways to structure.
Yeah, you're pretty advanced in your investing career right now. How does somebody get started and how do they look for money? Where should they even start?
Well, I mean, again, I got a program for that called the 100K Challenge. And what you have to do is work with your social circles. So every human being, Sarah, knows 150 people tribally. You know, you have a tribe of 150 names and people that you know. Now, if you just open up your phone, you've got a list right inside your phone of people. You know, I'm just going to open my phone right now, see how many people are in my phone. You scroll to the bottom of your phone on your contacts list, it'll tell you how many people you know. So in my phone, I have 4,499 contacts. Now, most people have like 150 people in their phone. And what you need to do is organize those people into three circles. And this is actually, I think this might be a Money People deal. I can't remember. It's either in the book or it's in one of the bonuses with the book. And there's three circles. There's your first circle, people who know you and will buy from you. Your second circle is people like maybe they kind of know you. There's like a low chance they'll buy from you. And then there's the third circle, people who barely know you, and there's like a 2% chance they'll buy from you. So your game has to be to get the third circle and the second circle and the first circle, and the first circle investing. And you do that, and you run your business for a while, and then your goal is to get those people to introduce you to the rich people they know. Like, you could be broke as a joke. I was broke as a joke. All my friends were pot-smoking musicians and drunks and teachers and mailmen, and my dad's a limo driver, so I had nothing. And I was able to get to the, you know, the rich people through the second generation of investors. So the first generation were people that I knew. Second generation was getting to the real money and the people that should be investing with you, which is very rich accredited investors.
Some great points. And so have your parents and friends come around now that you're where you are?
Oh, everybody loves you when you're winning. My dad works for me now. He wow. works in my office. He actually got 2 weeks ago, he got three deals in 1 week. So he works in my acquisition department as one of the lowest guys. And I told Bryce, my manager, if he sucks, fire him. So, you know, family, working with family can be tough because you don't want to fire your family. So he can fire him if he's not doing good. And then, you know, my mom, she's become more supportive too, but you know, people only become supportive when you're winning. They don't, right. When you're starting out and you're unproven, everybody, I remember I got off the bus. I took a rich dad seminar years ago and I got off the bus in the downtown of Winnipeg in Osborne Village. And I had a little name tag. It says, "Hi, my name is Stefan. I'm learning to be rich." And I had a purple bag and a purple lanyard on. And I got off the bus because I was broke. I took the bus to the seminar. And I got off the bus to transfer, and my bandmates, the guys in my band, saw me, and they laughed at me. They said, "Ha ha, I'm learning to be rich. That's so stupid." Well, now I am rich, and I don't know what they're doing, but, you know, people laugh at you, and they get threatened by you, and they might even hate you because you're asking for a bigger thing in life. They'll try to stop you. They'll try to protect you. They'll be negative, all these things, because they don't want you, they want you doing well, but they don't want you doing better than them.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. How do you stay grounded in all this? I mean, looking back at where you started and where you are today, how do you stay humble?
Well, staying humble is easy. Just get punched in the face a couple of times by the market. I mean, you have to have some failures. When I was, 25, I was a pretty hotshot kid. I'd never lost. And I went on a massive winning streak. So I was like really hot. And when I'd go and speak, people would say I was egotistical and I looked like a GQ model. You know, I was really skinny and nice suits. And, I was perfect. And since then, I'm 31. I've taken some punches, taken some hits. I've lived through some hardships. And I understand that I'm a fallible man, just like anybody else. I'm imperfect. Everybody's got problems. So I think all you need is a couple punches in the face to get rid of your pride. You know what I mean? I think Mike Tyson says everybody has a plan until he gets punched in the face, and he's a champion boxer. So that's all you need is, you just need a little bit of fear of God and to know that you're not immortal. And once you find out, I'm 31 now. I take my mom out for dinner once a week. I take my dad out for dinner once a week because I know we don't live forever. And when you know that you're going to die one day, and when you know that they're going to die, and you know that you're not invincible in the market, you become more grounded and more humble because, I've got a whole bunch of mistakes. I got a whole bunch of wins. Thank God the wins are more than the mistakes. But yeah, that's what you need. If you need a tune-up, just go get punched in the face a few times and you'll be fine.
What do you think is the biggest lesson that you've learned through all of this?
Well, I think the biggest thing, Sarah, is you just got to respect the grind. And that's one of my brands I own. It's called Respect the Grind. And what it means is it takes 10 years and 10,000 hours to be a master. And if you want to be great at something, it will take you 10 years. Like I'm coming up to 10 years now in real estate, and I don't even think I'm very good. It takes 10 years, 10,000 hours to be a master. You have to start making that investment. And same with, if you want to make money like a doctor, let's say you want to make 400 grand, you got to probably invest 400 grand in yourself. And that's what doctors do. Some of those medical educations cost, hundreds of thousands of dollars. And my real estate and business education has cost me about 300 grand over the last 8 years. So I think you got to invest in yourself and you got to invest in the process and know that it's going to take you 10 years and 10,000 hours. But if you stick it out, first 2 years in business, you're going to be breaking even or losing money because you're investing in yourself and your business. Year five, you're probably affluent. You probably have a nice high income. And if you stick it out for 10 years, you're rich. If you can survive for 10 years in a business, you have the opportunity to be rich by that point. And if you do 20 years, well, now you're really rich. So you just got to understand what it takes and understand that you're not just going to go to a weekend seminar for 2 days and learn to be a master, and you're not going to read one book. You got to make some serious investments.
Absolutely. So what do you think is the next chapter for you? What are some of your goals for this year and the next 5 years?
Well, I'm releasing 3 more books this year. So I've written 2 books already in January. None of them are on real estate. One's on selling. One's on how to be a man, because we have a lot of weak men in society that never learned how to be a man. And then I'm writing another one called Respect the Grind. So 3 more books. I'm doing e-commerce, opening a journal company. I'm doing a Canadian tour across the country for real estate, training people, releasing a new course. We're doing a super conference in November. Just a lot of, I told myself I was going to do less things this year. And that is less things for me because I'm insane. But it's all about the next frontier for me is e-commerce, because real estate's nice. It's good. I've also got some information-based businesses, which is good. I'm always diversifying and hedging because you never know what you don't know.
Right.
And you don't know if real estate's going to be great tomorrow or good tomorrow. Real estate's always good, but you don't want to be too invested in one thing because you never know what's going to work in entrepreneurship and investing. So Warren Buffett says you got to diversify to protect yourself from your own ignorance. And so I'm opening up e-commerce. I'm looking at maybe opening a lending company, and I'd love to open a private equity. But those are all, you know, in the pipeline future projects.
So a lot of stuff. Are you going to have the time to do it all?
Well, I don't have the time. I just build a bigger team, right? So, right. You know, I got 10 in-house employees here, so I have no time. Absolutely not. I mean, it's Sunday morning here. I'm talking to you. So, you know, I got up at 7. I started working again on Sunday. On Saturday, I think I got up at 7. I was working again. And I worked till 7 p.m. last night on Saturday. And I work, you know, probably 12 to 18 hours Monday to Friday every day too. So I don't have any time. No, I don't. But nobody, even the most broke people, don't have any time because they used all their time too.
That's
the main
true.
Thing is it's building teams, it's delegating, it's growing leaders in your company. You know, the more leaders I can grow in my company, the bigger the company can get. And that's something I've learned in the last year. It's not about just having people, you need leaders. So growing leaders is how this whole thing can expand to a huge size.
Amazing. So let's get on to the lightning round, where I would ask you a series of 5 different questions, and then you would give me an answer within a minute. Are you ready for it?
Are you going to ask me about boxers or briefs?
No, this is a, this is a real estate
boxers
show,
or
briefs. So.
Vanilla or chocolate? Vanilla. Okay, let's go.
All right, so let's get started. So first question, what's your favorite real estate investing book ever?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I think it's got to go to Rich Dad, Poor Dad, because that's the base. I mean, not everything in that book's perfect. Another great book is Art of the Deal by Donald Trump. Is an amazing real estate book. It's unbelievable that you can read how his mind works. And then I'm trying to think of a runner-up. I'll just give you the two.
Perfect. What about your favorite podcast?
Oh, man. You know what? I'm not a big podcast listener, but I was listening to Tim Ferriss's podcast, and it was it's pretty awesome. I like his guests. I mean, he's the heavyweight champion, so I just go with the biggest guy.
Number 3, what's your favorite pastime? So what do you do for fun when you're not doing all your real estate stuff?
Well, I really like writing. That's like that's my goal is I want to write 20 books. So I like to write, and I have a guilty pleasure. I play video games. I'm a pretty big nerd.
What video games do you like?
I play Blizzard games. So it's like StarCraft and Warcraft and all that stuff.
All right, good. Number 4, if you lost all of your money and your assets tomorrow, how do you start again?
That's easy. You just go raise a bunch of money and just start it again in a bigger way. That's not a problem at all. I've got my skills, so you never lose your skills.
That's true. And you've got a lot of your connections, I'm sure, too.
Yeah, I mean, my brand would take a hit, but, you know, a lot of brands get broken at some point and redeem themselves. I mean, look at Apple, you know, Apple got screwed up and they recovered. So you just do a turnaround.
That's true. Question number 5, if somebody came to you and they had $50,000, how would you recommend they get started?
So they have 50 grand?
Correct.
And they want to invest in real estate?
Exactly.
Well, I think I would say you got to get some training and some coaching with that 50 grand and then learn to raise money right out of the gates so you can scale your business and then spend a portion on marketing and spend a portion perhaps on systems and maybe a virtual assistant or an assistant so you can leverage right away to like 6 or 12 deals a year.
Okay, awesome. So that was the 5 questions of the lightning round. So there's a couple final questions I have. Where can listeners find you if they'd like to reach out to you and know more about you?
Yeah, so they can find me at stefanarnio.com. I'll spell that for you. It's S-T-E-F-A-N, last name Arnio, A-A-R-N-I-O.com. So it's double A-R-N-I-O. And if you go to that website and go /book, which is a secret website, they'll get a book for pretty much free. I think it's like $3.95. I'll give that as a promo to your listeners.
Amazing. Thanks very much. And any last words of advice or anything else that you'd like to let the listeners know about?
You just got to keep going and respect the grind, Sarah. Come on, you know that. You just got to respect it's going to take you 10 years and 10,000 hours. Don't violate the process.
Amazing. All right. Thanks so much, Stefan, for coming on the show. It was great to hear about all your success, and best of luck in 2018.
Thank you, Sarah. Appreciate the call.
Thanks so much for listening to Where Should I Invest with your host, Sarah Larbee. Make sure to listen in next time. We'll catch you on the next episode of Where Should I Invest?